Let's do this.
Slow down. You don't need to jump into the next thing. You don't have to go from your whole identity as an athlete to your whole identity is now your job. A lot of people experience performance anxiety, but the coaches don't talk about that as like a way to prepare.
On point. Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Point. I'm your host, Taylor Burke, and today I have former NCAA Division I athlete and the fastest growing advocate for athlete wellness in life after sport. She is the creator of the top health and fitness podcast, Live Your Personal Best, and author of Elite to Everyday Athlete and Inner Drive. Give it up for Emily Kaufman. Hi, Em.
What an introduction. Thanks for having me, Taylor.
Of course. Thanks for being a part of the podcast. So for a little bit of background, you've been an athlete. Like I just said, you were on the row team. But before that, were you also doing sports like in high school and just growing up?
Oh, yeah. Always growing up. It was like 10 different sports. Started with dance and then volleyball, lacrosse, field hockey until finally in high school, I found rowing. Rowing's kind of a later on sport. Went to college for that, did it all 4 years, and then tried it professionally afterwards too, until I retired, and now I'm just kind of an everyday athlete.
So how do you do that professionally after college? Like, there's actual teams that compete with other teams?
Yeah, so it's a little tough because no one can really be a full-time rowing athlete. There's no sponsorships there. There's not a lot of competitions. And so it was more I was trying out to be on Team USA, go to the Olympics. But while doing that, you need a full-time job. And so right after I graduated, I went to Chula Vista, California. It's one of like the three Olympic rowing centers. And I was there and I got really burnt out so fast. You know, every single day I was only surrounded by teammates. You're living on campus. I didn't even have a car there. So every meal was with teammates. I had multiple practices a day. All I was talking about was rowing. And as I mentioned, you know, you can't really make a career out of it. And so I decided I was no longer having fun with it. And that's why I was like, okay, time to move on to the next thing.
Was that a hard realization? Like, I mean, how did you come to that conclusion? Like, okay, I have to move on.
I mean, it was tough. I think that me even going out to California to begin with was almost denial of, oh, I don't need to move on. Like, this was the one thing in my life that I had been good at and I'd been good at for so long. I was just trying to hold on to it. It was all of my identity. It's where I met all my friends and I didn't know anything else. So right after college, that almost seemed like the logical next step of like, yeah, I'll just try to continue on. And then realized quickly, you know, I didn't do it because I was still really enjoying it or I loved, you know, this new lifestyle, but more just I was afraid of what the other options were to even try.
That is really hard. But Emily, today, now what you do is you share your wisdom to athletes kind of transitioning like you just said that you did. Why is that important for you to share your knowledge on that?
Yeah, well, I thought that it was so important to talk about, you know, this idea of life after sports, because it's a huge transition that not a lot of people talk about. And so I didn't even realize it was an issue for me till COVID started and I decided to start my podcast and I wanted it to be fitness related. I was like, okay, this is going to be for the beginners who, you know, might be afraid to go to the gym or need some motivation now that they're on their own. So I started this podcast, people started listening and I was getting feedback and it was mostly from other former athletes, other Division I athletes, other professional athletes who were like, yeah, I also struggle with going to the gym. I also struggle with creating a workout. I struggle with these things. And I was like, wait, I thought we were the ones that were supposed to have it figured out. I thought I was just talking to these beginners who knew nothing about the gym. But, you know, former athletes, they have to restart. They have to start over again. And no one tells you about that change. So by talking with other former teammates, other former athletes, I realized this was this huge issue that people weren't talking about. And that's why I was like, okay, I'm going to dedicate more time and like resources to talking about how to make the transition easier and what life after sport really looks like.
Mm-hmm. How come you think that transition period is so hard for athletes?
Yeah, I think it's hard because people don't talk about the fact that it's a huge change. And when I went through it in my book, it's like the first chapter I called Kicked Out of the Nest. And it's really this period of grieving because you're going through a loss. For different people, it's different things, but you're losing mentors, you're losing your hobby, you're losing your teammates, you're losing a purpose, you're losing a part of your identity, you're losing your outlet for stress, maybe you're losing so much of yourself. And so it hits different people differently, but the fact that we don't call it a loss and we don't call it, you know, this big transformation, we just kind of be like, oh, one day you're an athlete that you've been training for before for over 10 years and this is your goal and you have a championship, and then the next day you wake up and you no longer have that. You no longer have that goal, that teammate, that mindset. And so that's why I think that, you know, it's like this big loss that if we start talking about it that way, people can start preparing for it better and people can actually come up with a plan on how to approach it.
That makes so much sense. I've actually never thought of it that way, but Emily, I don't know if you know this about me, but I was a competitive cheerleader. I traveled the country. After that, I realized like I was kind of ready, but I did go through a process of being like, I miss it. Or like, those are like my glory days. How can I top that? It's a stage of your life that you can't get back. And it's hard.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is there's not a lot of other situations that you'll find yourself in as athletic retirement, because a lot of other retirements with jobs and stuff, yes, you go to school for 4 years or 8 years, but then you do that career for 20 plus years. You have this life cycle of it. Sports is so fast. Once you're done, you're usually in your teens or your mid 20s. And then you still have the next 40 years to be like, now what? Like, now I dedicated so much time and I consider myself an athlete, but then you have to figure out, okay, what does my life look like without that? And I think it's so easy for, you know, people to say, oh, like you're stuck living in the glory days, but that athletic part of you is always going to be there. It's what helps shape you and it will always be a part of your personality, not necessarily living in the glory days.
Do you see a lot of these athletes transition to become coaches?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So one of the steps, and we'll definitely be talking about this later, of the book too, is I call it nurture your new athletic role. And, you know, as I said, there's always going to be a part of it in you. Some people do want to go to that coaching aspect. They want to be fully involved in the sport. Other people can be a mentor. They can be, you know, an everyday athlete of intramurals or just pickups. Or you can also just be a fan of sports in general. You can be the one that watches football. You can watch your old sports. You can cheer on your old team. But I think that there's always some sort of aspects that sports will play a part in your life. Mm-hmm. It just depends on how much you want to give to it. When you have these heightened feelings of depression and anxiety, usually what people go to is getting endorphins from exercise. Mm-hmm. And the first thing former athletes do, they want to take a break from exercise. Oh. So it's almost just this perfect storm of you're losing so much in your life. You're probably going to be dealing with all of these new emotions. You have to find a new way to cope with it. And so that's what I tried to focus on for the book was, okay, how can we structure a new routine that you'll still be healthy physically, mentally, and emotionally as a former athlete? Because physically, you're not going to be, you know, working out twice a day, 6 days a week anymore. You're not going to be in peak condition. You're not going to be all these things, but you can still take care of yourself physically. You can still take care of yourself mentally, emotionally, have new goals, create new identities, find out what else brings you joy. And so I think that, okay, yes, all these things are going on and your body's changing and you're going through these like mental difficulties, but so many people have different outcomes from how they've experienced it. As you said, some become coaches, some do kind of like to take a further step back, explore something completely different. I know some people, you know, they'll be runners in college and then golfers in retirement, or they'll be rowers in college and then marathon runners after college. There's so many different outlets. And so a lot about what I talk about is just kind of the anecdotes of like how to do the what behind the research.
You said something super interesting and I just want to like reiterate it. You said that after people retire, the last thing they want to do is go to the gym or work out. How do they find that motivation to keep working out or to keep that endorphins up?
Yeah, so it's really tough for athletes right after sports to continue working out because there's usually two buckets that people fall into. One is they leave sports completely burnt out. They're like, I'm only working out because I'm told I have to do this. It's my job. It's the discipline there, but they don't actually enjoy it. So those people are pumped to not work out anymore. And then you have the other camp of people that are like, I love being this active. I love being this in shape. I love hitting new PRs. And they try to keep that up after sports. What happens with them is they then need a full-time job. They're no longer able to continue working out the same. They start to see these muscle decrease and then they end up in the same boat of burnt out. So you end up with this burnt out athlete who is seeing their body change. You know, athletes put so much worth on their body and they micromanage exactly how their body performs. So when they start seeing that change, you know, they're losing muscle, maybe gaining some fat, they take it hard. Like athletes probably take it harder than the average person just because we put so much worth on it. So I think one, in order to start working out, you have to change your mindset of like, this is not to create more value for yourself. This is not like a worthiness thing. Like, you don't have to work out to be like worthy in society, but then also changing the goals with it too. My number one suggestion is just to take all the numbers out of it completely at first. Disregard calories burned, disregard PRs, disregard so many things, and just find activities that you enjoy and different movements. I think that finding new workout classes is fun, trying intramurals of a different sport that you haven't played, getting together with like free running groups. That's the best way to do it, because then you're finding that community again, you're finding that like collective goal, and you're not focused on just the numbers, 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 because that's when I think it kind of gets unhealthy.
And you brought up something also that's kind of important. We've been talking about like working out and body, but we're also losing, when we retire as athletes, that community-based. I forgot that a lot of these sports are team-based. So you're around people and they become your family. That's a whole other aspect that you're losing also.
Yeah, and that's what really hit it for me, because people enjoy working out for different reasons. Some like the community aspect, some like the competition. For me, it was really community. And so I kept going to the gym, tried my own workouts. I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing without a coach telling me. And then one of my coworkers had invited me to a cycling group fitness class. And I was like, I don't even know what this is, but sure, I'll go with you. And I went, and it was an incredible thing, because you had an instructor sitting up there, like telling instructions to everyone in the room, and the doors are closed. You don't have people coming in or out. Like, you're all working towards that end goal together. And I was like, this is what I liked about sports. And now I finally found it in life after sports. And now I've continued on with group fitness classes ever since.
You wrote a book called Elite to Everyday Athlete, where you go over 9 steps to getting off the sidelines of life. And in this book, you discuss athletes having to finally retire and throw in the towel, and ultimately having a hard time becoming, in what you call in your book, a rookie again. So a cute little thing that you did is you made an acronym for sidelines. And just to break it down for our listeners, I'm just going to go over it real quick. The S is for slow down. I for intuitively eat. D, develop body acceptance. E, explore your identity. L, love your workout. I, improve nutrition knowledge. N, nurture new athletic role. E, expand your comfort zone. And S, spark a new interest. How did you come up with all of these?
Yeah. So when going through my own transition after, I was trying to think about it, and I thought that it was really important not to just have it focus on like the physical aspects, not just to focus on eating better, not just to focus on, you know, creating new goals, but they all really work together. Like, I felt that I didn't feel my most ambitious and best self in life after sports until I started working out. But if I wrote a book just on continuing to work out in life after sports, well, then you're probably going to miss that whole part about burnout and body acceptance and actually getting a better nutrition plan than you had when being an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so I think that all of these things really worked together. And the 9 steps are actually part of 3 different phases that go on to. So the first one is called Better Days Ahead. This is when you first leave sports, and for a lot of people, they're excited. They're like, this is something new and fun, and I've been waiting for this, no matter what's next. Usually it's graduation is next, or a new job, or they move. And so this is really fun. So in this step, that's when I have S, slow down, intuitively eat, and develop body acceptance. I think those are really simple steps of like, slow down. You don't need to jump into the next thing. You don't have to go from your whole identity as an athlete to your whole identity is now your job. Like, you don't need to find that first replacement. Just slow down, have fun with it, relax. Then in this part too, intuitively eating, I think, is a huge thing, because some athletes have really strict meal plans. Some don't care about what they eat at all. But either way, if you continue to eat the same you did as an athlete, but you completely change your routine, you completely change your workout schedule, you stop working out completely, then you're probably not going to get the best results, or you probably are not going to feel the best. You're going to be slowing down. So intuitively eating, I think, is a huge aspect right when you retire too. And then the third about better days ahead is develop body acceptance. So as I mentioned, your body's going to change. And whether you like try to prevent it or not, like it's not a bad thing. It's supposed to change. A lot of athletes have had probably the same body type since they were in high school. They've probably always been on the more muscular side. Body changes, we don't have to focus too much on it. We don't have to put pressure on stopping it to change. We're just developing body acceptance there.
I mean, I can just relate to that also, because after cheer, I mean, I could eat whatever I wanted, right? Because we're working out and, you know, but then after that, you're not working out the same as you did. And that's probably like the most relatable to me.
Yeah. No, I think that a lot of people go through it. And I think that that's probably what triggered me going and like actually realizing like, okay, I'm not an athlete anymore, was 6 months to 9 months, like after I had graduated, and I was nowhere near the same weight that I was when I was a coxswain in college, because I had to weigh myself every day in college. And then I hadn't stepped on a scale for half a year. And then I stepped on, and I was like, wow, like my body's not the same. I'm no longer an athlete. Like that was almost my wake up call.
Yeah. And was that hard for you?
Yeah, that was hard, because I remember I would like continue almost introducing myself as like, oh, as an athlete, I started this new job in a new city. And so, you know, people would ask me, why'd you move to Oklahoma? Why'd you live there? And I'd talk about rowing and how I was a Division I athlete. And I was like still holding on to that. And then, you know, they'd ask follow-up questions of like, oh, well, like what gym do you go to around here? And I wasn't even a member of a gym. Or they'd ask me like, oh, like what's your eating routine like? Or like, what's your meal plan? And I didn't have that. And then I would look at myself and I'm like, I don't even look the same. Like it was in that moment that I was like, this seems like a different lifetime ago. And that's almost when I felt like I was like, oh shit, like that's now my glory days.
Yeah. And I know all of these have like significant importance when you were writing your book during the 9 steps that really stood out to you, that you could really tell these athletes that they should focus on.
I think it just kind of depends on where they are in it. So, you know, we had talked about that first phase of being, you know, like the new unknown. And the next two phases that the steps fall under are the messy middle. So that's the point where now it's no longer new and exciting. That's the part that I was at where I'm like, I no longer recognize my body. I no longer recognize who I am. That's kind of when like this crisis comes up of like, I don't have a support system. I don't know what's going on. Trying to figure it out again. And then the third phase of better days ahead, that's when you start kind of figuring out, okay, like what does this new chapter look like? That's when, you know, it's like, yes, I can build on that last chapter. It's not like that was me as an athlete. Here is me now. Like you can kind of build off of what you already know. And so I think just kind of encouraging people to get to that last step. Like this is always a transition. It's going to be a messy transition. You can't just jump in one day from like one version of you to the next.
Have you had a lot of athletes reach out to you?
Yeah, I've had some parents read it. And then they're the ones that are like, oh, I recommend this to my daughter. Or I recommend it to like my son's coach. Kind of just like as a teaching of a lot of these things people might not be aware of that are even like coming up next. Like, I think this is important for people to talk about when they're still an athlete. And it doesn't matter even if you graduated and retired 5 years ago, like you might still be missing a crucial part of like, if part of you still feels like you're hanging on, or part of you still feels like you haven't been able to make that transition and you aren't as happy now as you were when you had that team and as you were an athlete, then I think that going through this book definitely helps, and you can kind of go through one by one of like, okay, this is where I need to focus on.
Did you miss Iconic 22? Feeling some FOMO? Don't worry. Catch up on all the amazing and inspiring talks from speakers like Venus Williams, Tabitha Coffey, and more with Iconic On Demand. Head over to iconic.vegaro.com to start watching. Then get pumped to join us at next year's Iconic Conference.
How do people find their next passion and purpose?
Yeah, so that would be the last step, or the last two steps, I think, kind of go hand in hand. So E is expand your comfort zone. And then S is spark a new interest. So a lot of athletes get frustrated once they retire because they're so good at sports. They were at the top of their game when they probably retired. They had already been practicing it for every single day, for weeks, for months, for years. And so they're used to being that level, and their ego is kind of up there. Mine was definitely up there. You know, I was like, oh, I went to college for it. Then when you try to find something new, you have to go back to being a beginner. And that's really tough. Like, we don't think back to that first day of tryouts when you like messed up a ton of times and you didn't even know what the names for different plays were. You just had to go out there, get out of your comfort zone and see if you could have fun with it. And so that's what we need to be reminded of, is when you find this next thing or when you're looking to find this next interest of yours, you're going to be really bad at it to start.
That's a good reminder. Yeah.
Yeah. When I started my book, I wasn't an author when I had started. It's not like I had written all these things. I had written a few college essays, but I knew that it was something that excited me and I knew it was something that I wanted to try doing. And so at the beginning, it was tough, but then, you know, five editors later, it turned into a really good book. Same with the podcast. The first ones are probably a little awkward to listen to, but here we are 3 years later and I have developed my craft. I've gotten better at it. And so that's a reminder to athletes of, like, one is you have to go outside of your comfort zone. You have to be able and willing to try new things, or else you're not going to find it just doing the same things over and over again. And then look for those things that do spark an interest in you. It doesn't matter how bad you are at it. You can look at it just like you did when you were trying out for your first day of your sport. Remember how bad you were, but how excited you were to get better. And you can get to that same level in anything else.
Emily, so anything that you know now that you wish you knew as you started your next chapter as a retired athlete?
Yeah, so I briefly mentioned it, but I think that it's worth saying again, but it is a transition. It's a transformation. It is bridging one part of your life into how you're living as a retired athlete, as life after sports. And so anytime that you feel frustrated that, you know, you shouldn't be like missing it, that you should be moved on, just remember, like, it's a process and there's no rush and you don't have to get to like some certain end goal. I think we're all used to having end goals and end of season and championships to like tie the bow on top, and it life isn't like that. It's just always going to be a process.
Yeah, so to keep that in mind. And something that you also talk about in your book and that we haven't touched on yet is burnt out. We all go through our motivation peak and then being like, okay, I do not want to get out of bed and go to the gym before work. Let's talk a little bit about burnout and any advice and insight you can give us to get through that rut.
Yeah, so burnout is tough, and it's something that I pushed myself through probably for a solid year when I was in college. You know, my junior year, there was nothing more I wanted to do than just quit my team, but that wasn't really a possibility. And so every single day, you know, I'd go in with this negative mindset. I'd go in feeling like it was forced and I wasn't happy and I was just giving so much. And so I think step one is, if you do sense that you're feeling burnout, is to take a step back. If it's something like a workout routine of yours, taking a step back and giving yourself that time for rest is so important, because that's what will make you be able to bounce back faster. Like, taking one day of rest now is going to help you so much more than trying to push through every day and then having to take a month off. So the first thing is, you know, counterintuitive, but just taking that break if you are trying to go towards this big goal and you're getting burnt out getting there. But then the second part too is, I know that there's a lot of times that maybe you can't take a break. Maybe the goal is something like, oh, you're in grad school and maybe you're a mom and you have this big deadline and there's just so much going on. So I think that this trend is really popular right now. So it's kind of funny, but this idea of quiet quitting, I don't know if you've heard about it
at all.
Or no. Okay. So it's talking about a lot in like the corporate world and with working, but this idea of quiet quitting is just doing the bare minimum because, you know, people are burnt out of their jobs and they're really frustrated with their work. And so this idea is like, what's the bare minimum you can do, but still do a good job or still get by. And so I think that that's definitely a possibility too. If, you know, you want to prioritize this fitness, yeah, fitness doesn't have to be every day then, or it doesn't have to be an hour at the gym, or it doesn't even need to be in the gym. What is the minimum amount of effort you can do? Some days that could look like just a 20-minute walk. Some days that could look like, you know, doing it outside while you're waiting for something instead of driving all the way to the gym. So there's ways to be creative, and trying to do that bare minimum will really help some days. And I think that's really the key in order to fit it all in when you're like someone that wants to do it all.
Totally. Okay, so let's kind of switch gears a little bit. You have recently dropped the manuscript for your new book, and it is called Inner Drive. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, this will be one of my first times talking about it. Woo! So I'm super excited because it's officially written, but it doesn't come out until January. Okay. But I was really inspired to write Inner Drive because the book that I wrote, Elite to Everyday Athlete, did touch on the mental aspects, but I feel like it didn't really go into my journey as an athlete and what really got me to where I was. And then the beginning of this year, the NCAA actually saw a record amount of student athletes that had committed suicide. And when I was in high school, one of my teammates had committed suicide, and same thing within college. And athletics is tough. It's a tough atmosphere to be in. It's a lot of pressure on yourself. And I feel like I didn't do a good job in my first book telling my own story. And so I wanted Inner Drive to be a real inside look of athletics and not just the sugar-coated version and not just, I don't know how to put it, just the image that people think athletes are. They think that, you know, if athletes are winning and they're succeeding, then there's nothing else going on. But there's actually a really talented athlete that had passed away from suicide earlier this year who had just won MVP at the NCAA championship. And everyone was like shocked by that story. And so I was like, okay, I really want to be able to get a story like this out. So it is a essay and poetry book that brings you through the life of an athlete from loving their sport and feeling so motivated and passionate and wanting to win to going through this burnout and the pressure that they feel. And then it's going into the end of changing our definition of success and changing our outlook on what it means to be successful and motivated into finding our own reason to keep pushing on, into finding our own passions. And that's why it's called Inner Drive, is because a lot of people are like, oh, athletes are so self-motivated. And at some point it does go though from being self-motivated to this place of feeling pressure from the outside. And so I'm trying to switch that back into giving the power to the athlete. So I think that one, it's really important for athletes to read, to be able to, you know, see that they're not alone in this, to be able to notice that all of these feelings are so normal across all athletes. And then two, for, you know, these parents and coaches who might not see the lens of what the athlete goes through, understand there's so much that goes on behind the scenes.
Wow, that is actually so powerful. I've totally have seen the suicide rate go up. Can you touch on a little bit about why we think that's skyrocketed recently?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up right here. Okay, so the NCAA actually released this. It's on their website, and I was almost a little shocked that they released this.
Yeah.
But according to their research from their athletes, 25% of male athletes and 30% of female athletes felt difficulties were piling up so high that they couldn't overcome them within only the past 30 days. So that's not at some point in their career they felt that difficulties were so high they couldn't overcome. That was like immediately, like they could remember in their head sometime in the past month that they felt that.
In the past
30% of female athletes. Yeah.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah. And so I don't know if there's like one thing to pinpoint it on, but when they released that, I felt that because I was like, I can also pinpoint times when I was an athlete and I felt that same way. So at any given moment, knowing that over a quarter of your team also feels that way and not knowing how to overcome it is huge. And so I think that there's a lot of things that can be improved. I think there's a lot of things like resources and different things, but I'm not here trying to change everything. I'm just trying to help share my story and also just help normalize talking about it, because as I mentioned, this had touched me on every team that I've been a member of for rowing, and it was still not even talked about after it happened.
Even just talking about suicide in general, I mean, aside from just the sports aspect of it, is very taboo. It's not really talked about.
Yeah, I think that the first step is, you know, my focus is obviously on athletes. So first of all, for athletes is realizing there's so much more than performance, realizing that there's so much more. It's their human being. There was a documentary that came out, I think 2 summers ago now, called Weight of Gold by Michael Phelps. He helped direct it, talking about like how these Olympians felt right after winning. And a lot of them went on and they almost just felt like trash after the Olympics. Some of them were like, I had to then go pick up a minimum wage job. Some felt like, you know, like they had this high and then they had to resort to drugs to feel that high ever again. So in the athletic world, I think one is just recognizing that athletes are people, but then two, just mental health in general, I think that it's really important just to be able to have a conversation with the people around you and being able to be that trusting, listening ear. Because I know for me, you know, I wasn't looking ever for someone to solve my problems and I didn't even want to talk about it. But I think that the more trust you can build with the people around you, it just makes it easier. And if someone came to you and they're like, oh, I'm struggling, you don't have to be the one to help. You can just be like, these are some resources. These are some things that have worked for me. This is something, like, just being able to talk about it without shutting it down.
And you know what? I'm also thinking right now too, this is also really important for the athlete's coach. If they see that their team is under a lot of pressure, or sometimes it's the coach putting on that pressure and, you know, we need to win more, work out more, or you're slacking. And I mean, that can build up too.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was talking with someone actually recently for my podcast about performance anxiety and depression after competition and stuff. And a lot of people experience performance anxiety, but the coaches don't talk about that as like a way to prepare, you know, like these are techniques to help with that anxiety. And so I think that the more that we can have techniques, not just to build strength or build muscle, but also techniques to help us mentally, would be huge in terms of one, performance for an athlete, but then two, just for life overall and getting a better sense of well-being.
And so how has this process been writing this book for you compared to your last book?
Yeah, it's very, very different.
Yeah.
The first one, you know, is very research-based and I focus a lot on other people's stories. This one, I feel like almost every call with my editor is like a mini therapy session because they're like, I need you to go a little deeper. Or, you know, I describe this time in my life where, you know, it was almost like that black hole of like, when am I getting out of this? When does the finish line come? When can I be done with sports? And they're like, oh, well, I need you to pinpoint like one time. And I was like, what do you mean one time? This is like every day. So just trying to put myself back into that moment of like, okay, what was I feeling when I was at my low? What was I feeling when I was at my high? Like, what helped me come out of it? It's definitely a lot more personal and it's taking a lot more to like get out on paper.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but like, what is your inner drive? You know, like full circle there, like, where do you find your inner drive right now?
So I think that the biggest thing for me to go from like this place to just feeling the pressure and feeling the overwhelm was knowing that the goal at the end of the day was just about making myself happy, was about making myself proud. And that was really tough because, you know, you have all these other people that felt like they were counting on me. My parents were counting on me, but I wasn't doing anyone any favors when I was just stressed out all the time. You know, I was probably my worst self when I was performing my best because I was cranky all the time. I was barely getting enough rest and recovery. So I was really short with people. I was snippy all the time. I was like this ball of anger that like, if you just like looked at me the wrong way, I was like ready to like fight you. And so I realized like, yeah, when I stopped caring as much, or when I went from, you know, doing all these extra workouts and putting this extra effort in into like, you know, that idea of quiet quitting and taking the pressure off myself, I was a lot happier. And so then the people around me were happier for me too. And so this inner drive that I find myself now is like, do I feel at peace with my decisions? Will I be happy making this decision for myself, like no one else? What does this mean for me? And then at the end of the day, like, it's only up to me. And I put that power back in my hands instead of always thinking about what other people think or what other people tell me to do. I gave myself the power back. And that's really been motivating me. And, you know, I wouldn't say I've slacked since then. I've now written the second book. I've done the podcast, all this other stuff. And so I think that a fear when people think, oh, I'm giving up that like motivation is, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to accomplish anything. In fact, it's the opposite's true. I guess the one thing that I'll leave it on is I forgot to share my favorite quote from the book. And so it's, sports are about winning. Life is about enjoying. And I think that that's just an important mindset shift to make. Is, you know, when we're being too hard on ourselves, the whole goal of this is not to be number one or to win or to be the best. There's no competitors in life. It's just about enjoying. And so, you know, really remembering that. I'm just quoting myself over here.
Yes. Okay. That's awesome. Emily, before I let you go, at the end of every podcast, I play a game. It is called Taylor's Would You Rather. And so I made 8 Would You Rather questions for you and I made them like Emily based.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. Would you rather play an amazing game but lose or play an average game but win?
Amazing game, but lose.
Would you rather have your practice be early in the morning or be late at night?
Early in the morning.
Would you rather be a team player or a singular star?
Team player.
Would you rather be able to run fast or run far?
Run far.
Would you rather be tall and slow or short and fast?
Short and fast. I'm already short.
Yeah, I was like, I was trying to think too when I was writing that, like, what sport do you play when you're tall and slow? Like, I don't
tennis?
Know. Yeah, I think, don't you need to be maybe for that? I don't know. Okay. Would you rather play indoors or play outdoors?
Indoors.
Would you rather be the star of a bad team or an average player on an elite team?
Average player on elite team.
Okay, last one. Would you rather be a legendary coach or a legendary player?
Legendary player. I don't think I could ever be a coach. Not really? Even a bad one.
Really? I totally could see you being a coach.
Yeah, I would just want to get back out there and like do it for them.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule and being a part of the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. Our goal is to always give you the content you didn't know you needed to know and to make sure you're always on point. I'm Taylor Burke. Thank you for listening.